It's time for Twig This Week in Google. We've got a pretty remarkable and somewhat embarrassing episode coming up here. Of course, the guests are awesome. Jeff Jarvis is here, also Gina Trapani and Ron Richards. And as you can see, I'm here in place of Leo, who's traveling. We've got some stuff to talk about: VidCon, Twitter, some announcements of Twitter and Vine of VidCon, Facebook video, whole bunch of stuff, Android apps on Chrome OS. But I think you're going to find our little two-factor experiment goes through the floor and wipes out my email for good. That's just a little tease, and I'm not overstating it. That's coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 358 for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016. Two-factor folly. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twig. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and enter promo code TWIG. Hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo on this week's episode of This Week in Google. It's always fun to kind of drop into the chair and talk about things outside of, well, just Android, especially when you see all the people that are on this show. It's kind of like an All About Android reunion, but for things outside of Android. We'll get to that in a second. First of all, got to welcome back, obviously, welcoming back Jeff Jarvis, professor at CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. How's it going, Jeff?
Hey, it's going great. I'm in Anaheim.
Anaheim. What you doing in Anaheim? VidCon.
Oh, it's the VidCon.
Oh. VidCon.
Excellent.
Yes.
I remember hearing about your travels to VidCon last year as well.
So yeah, exactly. So I'm really excited to be here this year.
Nice. Excellent. Well, we'll talk a little bit about VidCon. Also joining us, you heard her voice, Gina Trapani, returning to the show. How's it going, Gina?
Hey, it's great to be here.
It is great to have you here. MakerBase, makerbay.se, and you've got other things going on, right?
Yeah. I'm working at Postlight now, postlight.com. Nice. Having a lot of fun. I'm here in the very white Postlight phone booth office thing. That's why I'm sort of floating here in white.
You have ascended, said Father Robert earlier. he was very happy. Happy to see your video. It's great to have you back, Gina. Always love doing a show with you. Also, always love doing a show with my man, Ron Richards. First time on This Week in Google. Co-host on All About Android and other
That's
things.
About time, yeah.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I'm honored to be here finally on This Week in Google. I'm excited. Love doing All About Android on Tuesdays with you, Jason, and we miss you, Gina. And it's great to talk about things other than Android, because I'm not a one-trick pony. So
that's right. Well, and you've been on Tech News Today a handful of times, and I mean, you talk about it all. You don't care. Yeah.
I do my best to stay informed as I can.
Excellent. All right. Well, we've got a lot of stuff here in the doc. Actually, this being Ron's first time, he looked at the doc and he was like, whoa, we're talking about all this stuff? I'm like, no, it's okay. It's okay. This is a list of all the things that are happening.
You can inspire us to blather on.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jeff, why don't we start with you? Because you're in, you're as you said, Anaheim for VidCon. And you go there... I think you go there every year. I know you were there last year.
My second year here. So the story is, last year I was coming to interview Cenk Uygur of Young Turks on stage. And as I was leaving that morning, my daughter said, where are you going? And I said, LA. She said, oh, why are you going? I said, I'm going to say, have you heard of VidCon? And her response was, well, yeah. As in, why the hell aren't you taking me, you awful father? So I begged Jim Lauterbach. I begged him to please, I would do anything this year to get back in so I can bring my daughter, who is down the hall and is looking forward to tomorrow. And Jim has me interviewing Sean Atkins, who's the new CEO of MTV, on stage on Thursday, which I'm really looking forward to. And it's an amazing, I don't know, I was looking up the number because I need a number this week. Last year was 23,000 people. It's phenomenal. Just an absolutely packed, there's three floors, right? The bottom floor is the fans. And my daughter has a wrist filled with four wristbands so she can get into the meet and greets with four of her favorite stars. The floor above that is creators who make all this stuff. The floor above that is the industry that exploits the hell out of the two floors below. and so I'm here for industry and speaking for the old farts floor. But it's really, really amazing. Last year, the big lesson I got last year from being at VidCon that I've dined out on for the whole year since is that I saw that with these young people, video content is not a destination. It's not a product. It's not a thing. It's a social token that people use in their own conversations to their own ends. And we in media have to figure out how to make things that work similarly. And we don't know how to do that because we're egotistical and we think that we are the be all and end all. And that's just not the case. The relationship that people have to media is very different here. The pity of this year's VidCon, they did something very, very smart, something they absolutely had to do. I'm very glad they did it, but they had to tighten down on security given the two attacks in Orlando. Don't forget the first one was on a popular YouTube star and a tragic murderer. So they have 450 security people here this year. The fans won't be able to just mob around their people to be very organized in the meet and greets. It's a real pity that the world comes to this, but that's where we are. But nonetheless, I'm looking forward to VidCon. It's really well run. That's one indication of how well they really think they are responsible for a lot of young people here, and they take that very seriously. And it's a great conference.
You're talking about kind of the state of video. Obviously, VidCon, that's what it's all about. And Twitter, I believe this happened at VidCon. This was an announcement at VidCon, I think it was yesterday, that they're kind of changing some things, at least with Twitter's approach to video. And then beyond that, Vine's approach to video. We're all used to Vine videos, being 6-second short videos. And I think they're still staying that way. From what I understand from their announcement yesterday at VidCon, is that Vine video, the primary Vine video that is posted is still 6 seconds, but you can post related videos that are opening up that restriction from 6 seconds out to, 140 seconds long. So lengthening it out. So yet again, these video services are, services, social networks that are serving video are getting closer and closer to being kind of the same thing to each other. I don't know. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But
it's funny because I know that there's a huge following on Vine of people who love the 6-second limit and have been incredibly creative in using it. And there are people who are specifically Vine creators because of that limitation. And there's always that diehard audience who just loves that this is the platform they came up on and they don't want to see anything change of it. But for me as a content. I'm not an active user of Vine. I watch video on Snapchat more than I watch on Vine. But I think having the option to do extended videos is a good idea. And it just shows that, these companies have to evolve because it's funny because Jeff, I wanted to ask you, is VidCon, how much of an emphasis on YouTube is there at VidCon or is it complete? Because I've never been. Is it supportive of other platforms like Vine and Vimeo and whatnot?
They talk about it all. I think that John and Hank Green intended to start it as a YouTube thing, but decided what the hell, let's make it broader than that. And smart that they did. But yes, YouTube is gigantic here. Susan Wojcicki, the CEO, gives a keynote. Last year she did. This year she will again. This is YouTube space, but it's everything else as well. No. My favorite thing in the old farts industry track tomorrow morning, there's a half hour primer to us old farts about how to use Snapchat.
And it's
essential,
that's needed.
Actually.
It's because it's.
I'm going. I'm going.
I've been playing with it for the past couple of months, and the first month was rough. It was, as a burgeoning old fart, Jeff. I found it to be. I found the UI to be very.
It's happening to you.
But after a couple of months of using it, I've actually been enjoying it a lot. And some of my friends who I follow are really good at it. And I think the stuff they've been doing with content is really interesting. It's really compelling. But yeah, it does. It's a bit of a Rubik's Cube to actually figure out.
And it's a reprogramming of how anyone who's like used to, you know, working with video. I mean, we do video on a professional level, so we've got that extra layer of complication when it comes to figuring out a service like Snapchat. But just general users, you know, recording video, the thought, if you have any sort of legacy kind of exposure to that, is you're recording everything to keep it, you know, and you're recording everything to make sure that 10 years from now you could still watch it, or that is there when you want to refer back to it later. Even though I've got hundreds of thousands of photos and videos, and most of those I'm probably not going to look at ever again, you know, because I've got so many. I don't know if that makes sense either, but.
Yeah, that's the thing with Snapchat that I've struggled the most with is that there's actually two things I've struggled with. One is the temporary nature of it, which is, you know, I'm so used to leaving a digital breadcrumb trail behind me. You know, you can go back, I can scroll through my Instagram feed for the past couple of years and see where I've gone, what I've seen, all that sort of stuff. But the idea that stuff is gone in Snapchat, I kind of don't like, because there's stuff I've seen that I wish I could have hold on to. Furthermore, the lack of a feedback loop. I'm used to, you know, hitting the heart or the star or whatever is the icon or the like button or whatever, the plus one, whatever the kind of thing to give the creator, yes, I've seen this and I liked it. But without, other than chatting or sending something back to the other creator, it's just like there's no feedback loop. So I have a hard time with it. But people say that's why it's so good. So to each their own. But it's definitely been fun to play with.
What about you, Gina? Have you spent any time messing around with Snapchat? Have you been lulled over, pulled over into the dark side?
I have. I had a friend of mine who works at a college give me like a Snapchat lesson, and it was extremely eye-opening. Like, and I felt like the way that my parents must have felt when I was like a kid and showing them how technology worked. I literally was just like, this is crazy. And just, it's a whole different culture. I also just getting used to the ephemeral nature of it. Although you can take a screenshot of someone's snaps, but then they get notified that you do that, I heard. I guess this is one of the sort of more advanced So I got into it for a little while, but I think it's a really interesting app. But also, I feel like young folks keep the old folks out by making it sort of difficult to learn how to use on your own, which good for them. That's cool.
Everybody needs their
space,
their sandbox, I suppose.
The keep out sign on the door.
Yes,
right?
Like, that's pretty much what the Snapchat app icon is a keep out sign. Megan Maroney on yesterday's Tech News Today really made a good point as far as Snapchat is concerned, and just involving kind of like kids being open to the idea of this kind of ephemeral disappears, you know, that we leave no more breadcrumb trail. And that's just because they've heard, you know, the grownups talking about it, talking about how you have to be safe on the internet and how you have to make sure that you don't share too much and this and that. And that's their exposure to the internet from such a young age. So it makes a little more sense. I wish that I could reprogram my brain like that, because I think that sometimes it's probably a good idea to not throw everything out into the internet. I'm just so used to it. And maybe a part of that is just because it's part of what I do for a living, that it's kind of ingrained in not only my personal life, but my career. But I think there's value to kind of taking a step back and opening yourself up to kind of the goofiness of just recording something that's nothing more than a silly thing to watch one time and react to and move on. And I have a hard time doing that.
It really makes you realize the kind of concepts that you've just become ingrained. Like, I mean, I'm old enough that I remember that the idea of the permalink, you know, was just like revolutionary, you know, that you'd publish something online, you're going to keep it at this link and it's always going to be there and people can, you know, refer back to it, you know, was such a big deal. And that's something I just always held on to, that of course you would have this item archived at a certain place where you could always get to it. But I love how Snapchat kind of throws that on its head. And I also think for us, I mean, we're broadcasters, right? But I think the majority of Snapchat users are just messaging with their friends, right? Like they're not necessarily performing or using stories, or at least as far as I understand.
Yeah.
All I know is that I've been actively using it for about 3 or 4 months now, and I've yet to receive any nudes. So I was told there would be nudes, and there's none. So.
Disappointing, Ron. I think you're not using it well.
It really is.
You're doing it wrong. No.
clearly, Clearly, I can't find the button to unlock them. That's the problem.
You have to swipe diagonally from the top. That's the secret code.
Oh, had I known.
It opens up a whole new world, apparently. So do we think, I mean, Vine has, as a service, has kind of, it had a lot of traction in the beginning. And because of its limitations, you know, kind of mimicked Twitter's idea of keeping things short, keeping things refined to a smaller, you know, in that case, a shorter video, and seeing just what would happen. I remember when I first heard about Vine, I thought it was the most ridiculous idea in the world. 6-second videos. Who's even going to take the time to record 6-second videos? What can you even do with it? But a lot of people, you know, created an art form out of it. But it really seems like Vine over time, over a short period of time, has really kind of been left a little bit in the dust anyways.
Has it died on the vine, would you say, Jason?
No. It just seems like people are using Vine to like tease their longer videos on Instagram or YouTube. And so this change is just about Vine wanting to capture those folks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what that's about. They just don't want people to tease and then say, okay, watch the full video at this over other
there.
Place.
Yeah, over there.
Well, I mean, and I just generally, we all know the problems at Twitter and you know, and over the past year and as we've seen that drama unfold, but I generally have a problem with the way Twitter has implemented things like Vine and Periscope into their own products as opposed to folding them into the Twitter platform themselves. I would believe that they would have a much, you know, better penetration of use and more activity and stuff like that if they were coming up in my Twitter feed or if they were integrated somehow, if there was some way to make them, you know, not so autonomous and make it kind of unified. You know, I remember a couple of months ago having a when Facebook rolled out Facebook Live, and we're having a conversation with some friends about how it's, you know, it's probably going to, you know, eat Periscope and Meerkat's lunch because Facebook is so big. It might have even been on All About Android. I don't remember these conversations I've had, but you know, and if Twitter had just embraced Periscope and made it a live video streaming function of Twitter from the get-go, I bet you it would have been that much more successful. And then things like that happened today down in D.C. with the sit-in in Congress being on Periscope. More people would see stuff because Periscope is like this ghetto – Periscope and Vine, I feel like these ghettoized little applications within Twitter that don't get a massive amount of use because they're not a primary focus.
And you only really know to use them if you know that they even exist. I mean, Facebook does this with Instagram, right? Like Facebook owns Instagram. Instagram's doing all right. It was doing all right before Facebook came along and snapped it up. But Instagram absolutely benefits from the sheer fact that there's that crossplay, right? Like even if you're just on Facebook, you still see the people that you follow, their Instagram posts kind of come in and it says, you know, post it on Instagram. So you have a little bit of a memory jog there.
Yeah, or even how Facebook has implemented Facebook Live. I mean, I have a friend who likes to – he gets off work and he grabs his guitar and he just does indie rock covers to anybody who wants to watch. And I open up Facebook and I see, hey, Russ is on live right now. I've watched him on Facebook more than I've watched anybody on Periscope. Hmm. And I think it's because it's you know, serving up that content where I am. You know, and whether or not they're, you know, whether or not, you know, I know YouTube is tinkering a bit with the streaming, with the live streaming stuff, but it's not a huge focus. But I think there's a lot to be said about serving content to people to where they are. And I feel like Twitter kind of cut their nose off despite their face with these two products.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that on Facebook, I felt there was a time when I think Facebook discouraged you from putting your Twitter feed onto Facebook. Now I don't sense that because I think that's exactly what you just said. Instagram's there anyway. Other things are there anyway. What the hell? This is your place where people come together. And I think it's the Instagram ownership even changed some of the kind of ethic of Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, you just jogged my memory. That's exactly how I used to use Facebook for the majority. It would import my Twitter feed. And I know this because you get those memories, those look back memories of this day. And it's like up to a certain point going backwards, it's actual stuff. And then before that, it's like these short little blurbs that make absolutely no sense because I was putting it on Twitter. So I'm actually pretty happy they did that because it forced you to use the service a little bit differently. Speaking of Facebook and their video kind of pursuits, there was a document that was sent to Wall Street Journal that shows about how much Facebook is paying for its live streaming efforts with Facebook Live. We've heard plenty of times in the past that they're paying organizations, paying celebrities, that sort of stuff, to stream using the service. And it turns out, at least based on these documents, around 140 contracts totaling more than $50 million, which I don't know if that seems like a lot or a little. I mean, to Facebook, I realize that's like a penny, if even a penny. That's probably less than a penny to Facebook. but still, they're willing to pay for this. Is there any reason why they shouldn't be doing this? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think that if you look at it as Facebook paying content, I've got a problem with that. I've got a problem with the channel conflict. But the position to me is this is taking the place of ad revenue that they believe will come in when they start monetizing live.
Mm-hmm. And we were losing you a little bit there. That's okay.
I'll probably go off the other feed.
We'll fire that up when we get there. I went ahead and disconnected. This is something for a little bit later in the show. We can maybe talk about it next. But yeah, so I don't know. Gina, do you think? I mean, should Facebook be doing this? What do you think?
I do think that Facebook should be doing this. Should media companies be agreeing to this easy revenue?
That's a better question.
That I really, really don't know about. It feels like, I don't know. I guess I have this kind of sinister view of Facebook. It just feels like they're laying the trap. Mm-hmm. Laying the trap. And then, you know, and then what happens?
Right.
Right, but then what happens? I mean, like, what's wrong with that? I mean, like, they clearly have money to burn, and if content, we as content creators often struggle with, you know, how to monetize our content, and if this is an avenue for organizations like BuzzFeed or whomever else to monetize their content, it seems like a win-win. I mean, I'm glad to see Facebook investing in this.
Until they change their terms. And go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. Why don't you call me back, guys?
Okay, we're going to call Jeff back. What were you going to say, Gina?
I was just saying, like, you know, until they change their terms or change the rules or, you know, the kind of, you know, it just feels like whatever. It's that icky feeling that I have about, like, just becoming dependent upon a platform for distribution.
And all the platforms would love for you to become dependent on their platform, obviously.
Yes, exactly. And maybe it's not, listen, maybe it's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It just makes me feel a little worried for the media companies, not Facebook.
Right, but we're not hearing the E word. We're not hearing exclusive in this way. I mean, maybe they're doing exclusive content for Facebook Live, but they're not keeping BuzzFeed from doing stuff on Snapchat or for what, obviously, because they're active in those other platforms. You know, I mean, if I was a media, I mean, I'm a content creator, but if I was at a larger media company that Facebook was wooing and offering $3 million to commit to using the platform over the next 2 years, that it's great. Yeah, sure. You know, like, and I think that we've got this weird, and I get it, but we've got this weird feeling of you know, trepidation or kind of, you know, kind of fearful of Google, of Facebook, of these big companies, of what they're doing. But I just see it as them investing in the ecosystem. You know, they want content, so they need to support the people creating content to put on their platform, and the circle's got to keep going. And will that money always be there? Probably not. I mean, we saw the same thing with YouTube a couple of years ago when YouTube got super, you know, hyper supportive of vloggers and made YouTube stars and all stuff like that. And that has evolved and changed over the years since that started happening, like 5 years ago. So, you know, who knows what it will be in 2017. But for now, good, BuzzFeed, cash that check. Go do stuff on Facebook. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's fair. I think is if I'm back, kind of.
Yeah.
Is if they favor the content they pay for over the content that they don't,
right,
then a company like Twit can't break in if they're favoring, I don't know, let's make it up, CNET.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Yeah. It puts them in channel conflict.
Yeah. But I mean, that said, that's fair market, right? I mean, that's them. You know, it's frustrating for an upstart, you know, video content creator company to do that. But then the argument could be made that that's the motivation to make better content, to increase your audience, to get noticed, so that this is just another level. I mean, you know, just, you know, I know nowadays any, you know, Jason, we often talk about music a lot and all about Android, but, you know, nowadays any band can get together and record a garage band and put MP3s up on Bandcamp and now they're published. But years ago, there was a hierarchy and bands got signed by record labels because they did the work and they were, you know, had earned that spot. And I think there's something to be said for having a discipline in your content creation and having levels to attain. And, you know, putting money back into the content creators, I think, is a good thing. In this period of ad blockers and, you know, all these other ways to reroute around revenue, and it's really hard to make content. We know this personally. So I mean, I would worry, too, about the prioritization, but at least they're putting money into the ecosystem.
Who knows? Maybe Facebook will pay all of us to do live video at some point.
That'd be great. I would gladly.
$3.05 million, or does that just go to BuzzFeed, the highest paid publisher on that list? That's a lot of money.
So we tried out the new Mevo camera at CUNY. We had Srinivasan, the social media weekend at CUNY last week, so we did an episode of .NYC using the Mevo camera. And the sound isn't there yet because they don't have the software yet for the direct input. It was just the mic. Mm-hmm. But it's really impressive. Producer sitting there with an iPhone, able to click on faces, move boxes around, produce the entire show with a $400 camera and an iPhone. And you wow. think about what people can do on Facebook Live coming up, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, so I had not really looked into this camera a whole lot before. I mean, I'd heard about it. So this is basically the little kind of like tabletop, you put it down, live event camera. Does it follow the action as it's happening?
No, it's 150-degree angle, so it's like getting a four-camera shot in one.
Oh, okay.
And so it's getmevo.com.
Yep.
And from Livestream, and it's really sweet. It's just amazing because all you do is it recognizes faces. I think you're right, actually, Jason. I think that if you have it focused on my face and I move, unlike what just happened, I think that it would stick with me. If you want that, I think that it can do that.
No rig required, Matt.
But the camera is not moving. It's just moving the vision within the 150 degrees.
Right. It's got the full resolution, and it can lock onto you. Yeah, there we go.
Yes.
Is this an episode of .NYC? Which episode? Is this like the latest episode of .NYC?
Yeah, we did kind of a test, an experiment with social media weekend. Yeah.
Nice.
That is cool.
We put it on .NYC's Facebook stream, which didn't get many users. I in the future, I probably should put it on my stream on Facebook. And as I say, the sound is not perfect, but it's impressive.
I like that a lot. Being able to just smack it down there, and all of these things that are making it less and less required to have a Jammer B standing behind the TriCaster right now. Thank you.
Somebody go pat him on the back.
Yes,
somebody,
exactly.
Bring him a drink. Fuck up there, Jammer B. It's okay.
It's okay.
The robots are taking your job.
Oh, man.
Okay. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I feel like every single day there's a robot is taking your job story. It's starting to get a little intimidating. We have a lot to talk about. We also have some sponsors. So we're going to thank our sponsor here right now. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Texture. This is the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or your tablet. And it just makes the whole process. It's kind of like, think of Netflix, essentially. Netflix, you can binge watch all the movies that you want. Now you can do that with reading. And that's with Texture. When it comes to magazines, you know what you like. You're going to get all the magazines that you want in a super convenient place, a place that you're used to getting a lot of other content at, you know, your smartphone, your tablet, whatever it happens to be. Texture has completely reimagined the magazine reading experience. They go beyond offering just the same magazines that you get on newsstands. It's an elevated experience. With Texture, you get the magazines you know and the magazines that you love, plus you get a bunch of exclusive features, as well as videos from magazines like Men's Health, Wired, Interview. You can tap into the world's most popular magazines with the Texture app on your smartphone or your tablet. And you can even read the magazines offline, which is perfect if you're going on a flight and you have to go into offline mode. Although, sometimes the airplanes don't force you to do that nowadays. But just in case, or you're going traveling, you're going out to the beach and you don't have connectivity, you're going to want to bring a magazine with you. This is a way to do it. You can just download and read it anytime, anywhere. It's easy to remain culturally curious with things like top stories and new and noteworthy sections, so you can keep tabs on that. That's updated daily inside the Texture app. And you can check out Time Magazine's tribute to Muhammad Ali, for example. They keep, all these sections really keep things very up-to-date, very fresh, and engaging. Texture's made it easy to find articles that you're going to care about, that I can care about. The editorial team has enabled anyone to dive deep into interviews and stories that appeal to you. Plus, you can star your favorite magazines, and those are going to instantly add those to your personal library so you can keep track of it later. So you should definitely check out Texture for yourself. You can sign up right now. You'll gain insider access to all the content from the world's most in-demand publications. You can even share your subscription with your family. That's nice. You'll have access on up to 5 devices per account. There you go. So check it out. It's texture.com/twig. You can sign up there. You'll get your free trial today. And for a limited time, you can take advantage of their summer offer. That's 3 months for just $5. Wow. Gain immediate entry to all of the top magazines, including back issues and bonus video content. It's like getting all the seasons of your favorite show, but in magazine form. Try Texture for free right now at texture.com/twig. Check it out. And we thank Texture for their support of This Week in Google.
Jason, can we go back to video for 1 second?
Let's do it.
A fascinating story. So I don't know if you saw that members of the of Congress held a sit down over the lack of action on gun control legislation. And because the cameras that C-SPAN uses are controlled by the government, that is to say the majority, they were turned off. But C-SPAN went on broadcasting because legislators used Periscope broadcast what was happening. And so it went around the government cameras and around the, I guess we should say, government censorship of what was happening in our own House of Representatives. So I just found that fascinating. The Periscope became a revolutionary tool for our own government.
I think it was a combination. It was a combination of Periscope and Facebook Live, because I think Periscope kept on crashing for a lot of them, so they moved over to Facebook Live at one point. So, which is funny because it goes back to our previous point. But yeah, fascinating that C-SPAN doesn't have someone in the building there. It's literally just like a security camera that's triggered by the gavels. So glad to see the folks in Washington figuring out how to actually get video out of an important moment like that. So let's hope it has some results.
I guess that's the benefit of having multiple services, though, is if one doesn't work, you can always fall back onto the next one. Yeah. The problem for Periscope is if they then use Facebook Live and, hey, what do you know? That worked actually really well. Goodbye, Facebook Live. That's cool, though. That's crap. That's awesome that they were that those that were out on the floor actually cared enough to make that happen. You know what I mean? Instead of just business as usual. That's really cool.
Yeah, very cool.
I guess we can stay on Twitter because we really only have one other Twitter story in here, and it's actually a pretty interesting one if we want to move over to kind of machine learning. Twitter announced it bought AI startup Magic Pony, which has an incredible, awesome name, if I do say so myself. No sum was disclosed on that. CEO Jack Dorsey said this would help make Twitter the first and best place to see what's happening in the world. Which is kind of okay. So it's AI, but it's AI related to video. From what I could gather, basically what they do, what Magic Pony is known to do, is things like upgrading low res video into better looking video. Essentially, another part of their technology is analyzing images. So analyzing a series of images about a certain area or place or whatever, and then taking a single image that doesn't include all of that information and taking what's in the other images and smashing it in. So kind of filling in the blanks, so to speak, possibly creating kind of like taking a texture of an image that isn't evident in one place and, I don't know, lifting that from another one and kind of filling in the blanks. Twitter is doing, I guess, more and more in AI. This seems like it might actually translate somewhat into their video product. I'm trying to figure out what the importance of this acquisition is. Does anyone have any ideas here?
I don't know.
It seems like they could use this tech to kind of stitch together, you know, I mean, if you have a live event happening where a bunch of people are, you know, posting pictures or videos from one place, kind of using those to enhance one another, that the moments kind of application. I don't know. Am I stretching here?
I don't know. That sounds pretty forward thinking.
I think that's where the war is. If you look at the discussions we've had about Google Assistant that's going to be powered by AI. Facebook's ability to show you what you want is powered by AI. So yes, the ability to predict what you want and change your feeds and change how it knows what content is what content, sure. On the other hand, AI is just the magic fairy dust that's being thrown on everything. I don't know if you guys have seen the Tronk video this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tronk, no, I didn't see this.
Oh,
I think we kind of have to see it now.
You might want to show a bit of it. It's the former Tribune, which I worked for many years now. The founders are rolling in their graves. Renamed Tronk, and they put out a video talking about how AI is just going to solve everything they do.
Here we go. I put the video down at the bottom. And the strange thing about this video is it's really hard to tell whether it's actually taking itself seriously or whether it's total parody. it's just a strange deal. Do we have audio on it?
And it also means pooling of resources.
It's about meeting in the middle, having a tech startup culture meet a legacy corporate culture, and then evolving and changing. And that's really the fun part. That's exciting.
We have great titles. We produce tons of great content every single day. We're really focused on how we deliver it to people in a way that they want to consume it more and more.
One of the key ways we're going to harness the power of
our
journalism
is to... When I watched this video, I was like, okay, so this is just targeted at employees. Okay,
which is to motivate employees to get behind this wonderful strategy.
Harness the power of our local journalism, feed it into a funnel, and then optimize it so that we reach the biggest global audience possible.
The key to making our content really valuable to the broadest possible audience is to use machine learning to maximize all the time.
Yeah,
artificial intelligence is going to allow journalists to do their jobs more efficiently, finding the right photos, the videos, the databases, the things that you would package your stories with. Right now, that's a manual effort. With artificial intelligence, you can create a system that automatically is doing that for you almost instantaneously as you are writing, as you are working on a story.
Ultimately, those efficiencies will help us produce more content, better content. That will make stories much more exciting, much more visual. And today, that's what people expect.
So, Jeff, what is your takeaway on this? I mean, other than the video and the production level of things, which...
They have no strategy whatsoever. They're trying to imagine that they're just going to take their content factory. They're going to find more ways to throw more crap at you and make more crap to then more throw more crap at you. Now, so that I put this up on Twitter and I said, be the first on your block to mock this. And then an executive at another major newspaper company scolded me and said, well, people should be trying new things. I said, I dare you to tell me what the strategy is here, except throwing jargon at it and saying, we're going to have artificial intelligence make more stuff. It's not a strategy. They're not a content factory, but that's a whole other discussion. So it's been completely roundly mocked everywhere. I think there's a parody version out already, though.
Well, there must be.
That's rather redundant. Artificial intelligence becomes the secret sauce for everybody. Oh, we'll just add some in and it'll do amazing things. And that's what I worry about Twitter. If Twitter is really just a feed of what you want, how does artificial intelligence help that? I don't know. Then again, as I said, that's where the war is being fought with the other platforms.
So it's kind of this recurring theme. Everyone feels like they need to invest in artificial intelligence because everybody else is investing in artificial intelligence. But simply having AI as part of your plate of food is not necessarily enough. How do you actually put it to work, and how does it make sense for you? And I think that's kind of part of why I was a little confused with this whole Magic Pony thing. Is like, okay. You know, AI makes sense for a lot of companies. AI makes a lot of sense for something like Facebook and, you know, Google and kind of
the commerce companies.
Search process.
Lots of companies it makes sense for. Places that are going to try to learn you better, learn processes better, make better recommendations to you, know where better to merchandise and where better to recommend things to you. Yeah. But how
well,
is that
let's
Twitter?
Think about the place where Twitter, the problem that Twitter needs to solve is user acquisition. right? Getting people, you know, you said if Twitter is a feed of all the things that you want, there's a big step between signing up for Twitter and getting to the place where the feed is everything you want, right? So their big challenge for Twitter is going from signing up new users and then giving them a great experience to begin with. Here, this is something that would interest you. So if this is about like making Kim Kardashian's fuzzy photos a little bit sharper and making that a, you know, a thing, oh yeah, this is a thing on Twitter, I'm going to follow this person, then maybe that's what's worth it for them. You know, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think that's where the AI comes in for them is stronger recommendations for when you first are onboarding to convert lurkers or deserters into regular Twitter users.
Hmm. Just to get them to come back. I mean, they might sign up right. And then say, okay, what the big deal is, and then walk away and never come back or never log back in again. I think that's the great point. You know, I think that at this point, it's either AI or VR. I mean, it's pick one that's being invested in. And in all probable realities, it's both, because I imagine a lot of the work that the AI is doing is going to drive eventually, you know, the CRISPR photos, all stuff is going to drive an eventual VR experience because that needs to be so high res and so much better and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, I what Twitter's up to and what they're doing, I don't know. They clearly need to be doing something to get out of the rut they're in. And it looks like they're making small moves and pieces that we might not know what the end result is for a while, but, at least they're trying, you know, at least they're seeing where there's new technology and grabbing it and seeing how they can apply it to. I think that's interesting.
Sure. What do you say? Should we talk about Google a little bit? Because I guess this week in Google.
Yeah. Let's do that.
I just put a request in there. Now that the great explainer is on the show, I wanted to explain the two-factor change.
Ooh, okay.
Uh-oh, am I the great explainer? Listen, this show is in bad shape. I'm the great explainer.
Please do, because I've been realizing in quick order very recently how necessary it probably is for me to do this whole two-factor thing. And for some reason, I hesitate. I don't know if I fear it. I don't know what it is. I know it's safer, but I know it's also more inconvenient. With security comes inconvenience. I totally get it. But does this that we're going to talk about here, this two-factor change that Google made, is this an improvement? Does this make it easier? What do you think, Gina?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, so the current state of two-factor authentication is that you have to copy a code that, you know, that when you try to log in somewhere that you get an SMS with a link or a code, or you have to use an authenticator app to get a code, which then you hand manually key in to say, yes, this is me, this is my two-factor code. And so this change, so the problem with that is it's way inconvenient, right? It's really annoying and inconvenient, and that's why folks like Jason don't turn it on. Mm-hmm. This change is instead of having to like look at a code and scan a barcode, whatever, or get an SMS, you get a push notification with a button. Yes, authenticate me or no, right? And so you just tap it. So it just makes the experience of authenticating with two-factor
easier. Google Now or something, and you say, hey, somebody has tried to be you here. Is that you? Is that okay? And you just click the button?
Yes, that's my understanding. I haven't tried this new update, but that is my understanding.
I actually got hit with this last week, actually, on one of my personal domains that are running Google apps, where I logged in on a new computer, and then all of a sudden on my phone, I have two-factor authentication turned on. I've been using it for a very, very long time. I actually like the SMS, you know, like I get a code, I'm fine typing it in, all that sort of stuff. But I got this new experience without knowing what it was, and I almost didn't believe it. Like, I kind of had to do like a, whoa, what changed? You know, like I'm doing the Jurassic Park move as I'm looking at my computer. But it actually made it that much easier. It just said, you know, you have an attempted login on this computer on this IP address, you know, allow. And I said, yes. And then it just worked. And so I was impressed by it. Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And now
is this a step on the way to Google getting rid of passwords, as they've supposedly vowed they're going to do?
Oh God, I'd love to see that.
I gotta say, as somebody who now, you know, I'm as Gina and Jason know, and Jeff, I'll fill you in. I'm using the Nextbit Robin phone, and it's got the thumbprint verification, which I'm late to the game on this. I know the Nexus 6P and other devices have had this for a while, but it's my first device that I've been using on a daily basis with the thumbprint recognition, and I've been turning that on wherever I can. So like logging into the Bank of America app, I have a very long, complicated password. password for my online banking, and it's always been a pain in the butt with my fat fingers to type it in on the keyboard every time. Now I just scan my fingerprint and I log into my bank stuff and it works. Like that, to me, like that's the greatest argument against passwords. And if Google can figure out something, whether it's thumbprint based or some other way to eliminate passwords, I would be the first to sign up for it, because with all the requirements with capital letters and lowercase letters and numbers and symbols and all this sort of stuff, it's getting out of hand for the right reason, but it is also making it a larger obstacle to actually get to the data I want to get to on a daily basis. So,
yeah, I mean, passwords are the single biggest usability problem for everything. I mean, every time I see my mom, I have to reset her iTunes login. I mean, every single time, because she's trying to download an app, and I changed it last time. Oh, and I incremented it because you can't use the password that you used. Oh, I mean, passwords they're terrible. And yeah, I hope that this is some indication that Google knows that we need something better than passwords. The thing about two-factor auth, the SMS method, I think, is really flawed. I heard a friend of mine was saying that her account got hacked because someone managed to call Verizon, which was her carrier, mobile carrier, and basically transfer her line to a different SIM and then use two-factor auth, got the message, and like hacked her account that way by basically hacking her mobile account, right? So, like, I mean, look, there's always going to be places where things can get, where there are vulnerabilities, and the thing about two-factor is that it sort of spreads. Like, now there are more places, vectors for security attacks, even though it is more secure. So, I mean, this method, and this is why I use Authy, the app, or Google Authenticator. I use Authy because it's a little bit nicer. Why I use that method versus the SMS method. So, I think this is just kind of another way that you can implement this without tying it to your mobile carrier.
So basically, if you take this to the extreme, then anytime you try to sign into anything, if it goes to the device that Google knows you have and you say, okay, that will sign you in essence. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But you still had to use your password. It's still two-factor. You still had to use your password back at the original sign-in. It's just you didn't have to put the number in now.
Right, exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. Okay. That's what two-factor is to prove that you've got this other thing. The second
factors.
Factor is the phone or the tablet or whatever, the other device. Prove on the other device that you are you. And so it used to be via SMS, it used to be with this code that you get on the other device, and now it's just a push notification where you can just tap the button and confirm.
I think I did something I should not have done, you guys.
Uh-oh.
I was like, I'm gonna go ahead and do this two-factor thing.
Oh, no.
Live on the air, man.
Don't do it on the show.
Sometimes the best things happen live, though. Like, when I finally did it and hit okay, suddenly my Chrome OS said I needed to re-authenticate, right? Because, like, now I'm protected by two-factor. I clicked the button to do it. It powered off. So then I powered it back on, and now I'm stuck at the sign-in waiting to receive the code. Here's where I messed up, because the number I gave it was my Google Voice number.
Oh.
My Google Voice number is on the other side of the authentication.
Oh, Jason.
Yeah, but isn't your Google Voice number, isn't your phone receiving Google Voice number?
It's not anymore.
What about the flip? Can you go to Google Voice with the flip?
Oh, boy. Probably not. I'm happy this happened live, because if anything, I could at least tell you not to do that.
Let's watch Jason lock himself out of every single one of his devices live.
Let's see. I just need to get to Voice. That's all I need to do. Come on, Google. This one time, mess up and let me in. Let's see here. It says sign out, sign back in. Yeah, so this is synced now. Guys, I can't believe I did this for the show.
You're not your Google account. I mean,
all right, sign out, sign back in. It powered down. Yeah, no, it's going to be the same issue. I'm not going to be able to get it. Why did I give it my Google Voice number? Why? Because that's what I give everything, is my Google Voice number. But that, yeah, but I can't get the Google Voice number code that was sent via SMS. So then, great explainer. What are alternatives?
So wait, okay, let's think this through, you guys. Let's keep a cool head. So the ways in which you could access your Google Voice SMS messages, isn't there in Gmail a chat label? Is that still true? Your Google Voice messages?
Well,
a lot of things have changed with Google Voice, but
well, I mean, the problem is in any way that I would get access to that, I'm going to need the two-factor to log in, right?
And but you're logged in on one. Aren't you logged in on your phone?
No, it said it needed to re-authenticate there as well.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute. It just went away. Are you kidding me? It said it, and then it went away. Hold on. I know I can do this. It won't? Okay. Because, I think I got it. Hold on. I hope this works. You can vamp if you like. I've got to paste this in. I think I might have it.
The danger of two-factor right here.
No, yeah. You know, and part of it is my misunderstanding, but I can understand why I didn't see it.
Did you ask for the printout of the 10 codes?
Sorry, that's pretty much what I got was 10 codes because I've requested them from everywhere. Okay, so I'm going to sign in again. I think I can do this. This is a cautionary tale. Entering my password.
On a 3-hour tour.
The Google Voice wrinkle is definitely a wrinkle. I use my Google Voice number primarily, but when you set up, you know, when I set up my backup phone number, I have to use my, like native phone number because, you know, my Google Voice number is attached to my Google account, but I'm always so worried that I'm going to forget that and just get myself locked out. But you're going to resolve this, Jason. We're going to figure this out together. We're with you.
Okay. So the verification code that you are sent, that is the thing that you paste over there, right? So I got that right. Why it didn't accept it, I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. It's not accepting it when I put it in. All right, I'll continue. Well, actually, I can't even move the show along. I can't even see our doc anymore.
Oh, no.
Oh, you guys. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Let me try again. Audio listeners are like, wow, you suck. Yeah, no, it's just not working. Tell me this is something that Leo would do, right?
Jason, hold on. When you... sign up for two-factor.
Yeah.
You have the option to get 10 permanent codes that you can put in your wallet and use.
Should you
ever need a code?
I should have done that.
You didn't do that. Oh, okay.
No.
And so you can't even get into your account dashboard now to do that, though, right?
No. It says try another way to sign in. When I do that, the only thing there is send a text message to your phone because that's the only thing I have set up.
So Jason, you never got to the code that went to Google Voice. Like, that's what you need. You need to get the code that went to Google Voice. Is your voice number forwarding anywhere? Is there any device that it forwarded to or might still be in the shade or...
Wait a minute. Do you have the Google Voice app on your phone? But there's no way the Google Voice app is updated to support two-factor authentication yet.
That's true. But oh boy,
that app hasn't been updated for years.
I do have it on here, but I don't think I was signed in because it's not going to work again. Yeah, it's going to do the whole changes thing. Is there a story you guys want to talk about while I figure this out? So let me just tell you this. Two-factor authentication is really effective.
I can't believe the good humor you're keeping on this. I cannot believe it. I know.
I don't have a choice.
Ow.
Is the chat room have any recommendations? Have we gone to the chat room?
Oh, boy. I'm stuck. I'm going to log into it.
This is a good question. Does it have a can't access phone or didn't receive the message question? Like when it's asking for the code, when it's prompting you for a code, is there any way out?
No, it basically just says, it gives me the option, right? Here, let me see if I can show it without revealing anything, I think. I mean, it gives me, so basically, if you show, it doesn't matter. So if you see there, it basically says, you know, try another way to sign in. That's the only option I have. But when I do it, it's going to, let's see here, I'm trying. Yeah, it's basically like phone. Do you want to send a text?
Send a text message. Oh, my God, Jason.
Wow.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know. I don't know, you guys.
God.
I think I might have to start over with a brand new email account.
No.
That can't That can't be it.
No.
There's got to be a way.
All right. Well, I'm going to log in as a guest on my Chromebook because I can
Matt
do that.
Matt Cutts, where are you?
I know. He'd probably be able to, like, totally. Jeez. Why did I do that?
This had to have happened to somebody before. You can't be the.
Why did I do that, you guys?
You know, it really should have been smart enough to realize that you had entered your Google Voice number for that Google account and that you shouldn't have been allowed to do that.
Yeah.
It's a recursion, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's right. Like it sends to the thing that's behind the wall. And in order for me to get to that thing that's behind the wall, I need the thing that it sent me. Yeah. So I don't know what to say on that. All right. So I'm using my work email.
Somebody just asked the chat room, what if you used Authy and put an Authy number in? That doesn't work because you didn't.
I didn't install Authy.
He would have needed to scan the QR code and get Authy set up.
Right.
I mean, yeah, well, I mean, I have a different Gmail login. That's how I'm getting into the doc right now. So it's like I have another Gmail account, but
this was not your Google Apps account, Gmail right, Jason? Account?
No, it was not my apps Google account. Apps. No, it was not my apps account. It was my personal account.
If it was your apps account, the admin could unlock you. Oh, this is
fun.
This is brutal.
Come on, admit it. This is fun.
This is a Russian nesting doll of chaos. I love it. It's just like...
oh, geez, what did I do? Like I said, I'm happy it happened on the show because if anything, it's a lesson to be learned for somebody else. So there you go. That's what we do here. We educate.
Passwords are hard.
I know. Honestly, Gina, you painted such a beautiful picture of it. I was like, well, this is easy then. I'm going to just go ahead and do it.
I'm so sorry.
No.
Jason uses X Factor authentication. The truth is out there, but he can't get to it.
I like that.
It's got to be a way around this. I'm Googling.
I'm sure that there probably is, and I have a feeling that once I'm like out of the mode show mode, I might be able to focus on it. And I'm certain that somebody's watching in the chat room or at some point that can email us and let us know. Go ahead and email me. I don't know the best email to reach us, but aaa@twit.tv is the All About Android email, and I'll get it that way for sure. But man, I was so close. I was one phone number off. And so, deep breath. Moving on. What else should we talk about? What else, Google? Let's see here. Anything?
Jason can't see the rundown.
I've got the rundown now, thankfully. I'm just in with a different account. What about the DMCA? Google's getting a lot of requests, apparently. DMCA takedown requests. The number quadrupled over the past 2 years. And that's basically copyright holders just trying to wipe away, you know, the links to pirate sites from Google search, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously DMCA is essentially it provides safe harbor for internet services like Google. Artists and music groups want to amend U.S. copyright law to kind of change it because they say, you know, that it's just kind of unfair. They're playing game of whack-a-mole, essentially.
What do they want to do exactly?
Yeah, that's a great question. They want to change how it's worded. I'm not sure that I was able to find exactly the change that they're looking for. But yeah, they definitely want to change things so that they don't have to play whack-a-mole, essentially, chasing things down. Google has said that it handles around 3 million pirate links every single day, and that, you know, they're getting notice then takedown approach, which is what is going on right now. They say is working extremely well. It's got an upward trend. They say that's because it's scalable, and you know, artists and the like must like it because they're putting in a lot more requests and it's usable and everything. But the rights holders are basically saying it's like bailing out the ocean, bailing out an ocean with a teaspoon, which is a great way to summarize it. I don't know. Is it broken? What do you guys think?
I mean, a great example of this, I think, is something that I personally have dealt with is that so for, you know, years ago, like 5 years ago, whatever, for my comic book site, iFanboy, we used to do video shows. We're on Revision 3 and all that sort of stuff. And we had a theme song. And that theme song was done by an indie band that I knew people in the band, and I have a written approval to allow us to use the portion of the song as our theme song from them. You know, I covered my bases back in 2007, and that's what I did. Maybe about 6 months or so, we started getting DMCA takedown notices from YouTube that were filed by the distribution company that distributes this band's record. And they found our videos, flagged them, and YouTube took the videos down because we didn't have approval to use the to use the song, even though I do have approval to use the song. But of course, there's no way to challenge it. You just have to deal with it or choose to not monetize the video, which I ended up doing because I'd rather have the video up. It's not really a large monetization channel for me right now. But that's a great example of it where they just have these there's just organization after organization which is scanning YouTube and filing these DMCA notes to anyone and everyone because everyone's scrambling to make sure they're getting the money for the use of their own music, which I get, but it's a mess. It's a total mess.
I mean, YouTube specifically, that's like smack dab in the middle of their crosshairs. Artists just kind of feel YouTube monetizes their music without fair compensation. YouTube does have a thing where they've been doing this for at least a couple of years now, I know, where they're scanning everything that's uploaded and, you know, matching it against the database. And if it matches, they can, basically monetize that unlicensed content. They say they've paid out $3 billion to date in doing that. Jeez. But... is a lot of money, but I don't know what that what that is compared to however much other unlicensed music or licensed music is there.
And what I don't understand is there's all these pirate links are totally go to YouTube and type in, you search for anything and you find people just uploading complete albums. People are uploading complete, like, it's just all up there. Mm-hmm. It's this awful whack-a-mole game, like you said, that is just, I think I don't know what the solution is, and I don't know what the artists want to see YouTube to do, because I feel as if YouTube is trying to do the right thing by setting up tools to allow content owners to flag their flag content that they don't have approval for and chase down the money and all stuff like that. But I it's a problem that I feel like it's too big to solve at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm unclear on what the artists are proposing. I mean, Google's saying that takedown, notice then takedown is working. I mean, I get where, Taylor Swift and Billy Joel are coming from. Like, hey, my stuff is being hosted on YouTube unfairly and it shouldn't be. But the other option is that no one can upload anything until they've proven that it's fair, right? Or that it's not, copyrighted, which is insane. I mean,
yeah, they're really complaining in the letter about saying, well, technology's made it possible to put, all of histories and all of music in your pocket. Well, yeah, that's the reality you have to deal with now. That's exactly where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you're not making me feel any better in the back channel chat here.
I just saw those. Should we update the
oh
the
yeah oh, oh we yeah. should definitely update the viewers and the listeners on this. I think I'm screwed, you guys.
I think you might be.
I think I might have totally screwed my personal account with this move. So basically Google has a page, and JammerB, I don't know if you have the link, but I'll go ahead and paste it under the two-factor thing. There it is in the doc. Has a page that that warns against using Google Voice to send verification codes. Oh, man. Says if you use your Google Voice to receive verification codes, you can easily create a situation, as I've demonstrated, where you've locked yourself out of your account. For example, if you're signed out of your Google Voice app, you might need a... I can't even get through this without laughing. You might need a verification code to get back in. However, you won't be able to receive this verification code because it will be sent to your Google Voice, which you can't access. End of line. End of paragraph. And done. Moving on.
Yeah, if in case you've done this, this is what you should do. It's just like you won't be able to access it.
Oh, the truth is, and you'll never get a job at Google.
I know how to do that. I've done that before.
Google should have been smart enough to know that you just entered your Google Voice account attached to that email address. It should have known. Like, that's like not. I'm mad at Google. Like, that was user error that Google could have easily caught.
Well,
Jason, get a load of this. Look at the next link. If I understand it correctly, says that using Google Voice is a vulnerability to hackers because they can change both at once. So all you need to do is hack yourself.
Oh, okay. So that's all I need to do then, is I need to become a hacker of myself.
Go hack yourself, Jason. Go hack yourself.
At Authy.com, they have an entry that says, security notice, do not use a Google Voice number for two-factor authentication. These are all very useful articles. I certainly would have.
A different reason here. Keep going. What's interesting is it's not because of the obvious. It's because of another reason.
Let's see here. Over the past few months, we've seen a large number of accounts being compromised on several of our clients. All of them had two-factor authentication. How were they hacked? Simple. First, the attacker – and I'm reading from Authy.com's post here, obviously. First, the attacker compromises the user email. Should I be reading this out loud? The email is compromised mostly via phishing or by stealing the cookie. Okay, I didn't know that happened. Because Google uses the same cookie account for all of their products, the attacker can also access voice.google.com. Here, the attacker can see any SMS messages sent to you in real time. So this means the hacker can now easily reset your password and then use Google Voice. Okay. I don't know. I think I'm scared. I think I'm a little scared now. I don't know what to think about my future in this world if I can't get into my email address anymore. I know that sounds stupid, but my life is built upon that email address.
It's not like you can just abandon it and move on. I mean, I can't even imagine what's in that email account. Like, you've got to be able to get back into that.
I don't know.
Let's do something. Google account recovery form and just walk through that. It's a questionnaire. Yeah. See if there's any option for you there, Jason.
Let's see here.
Jason, wasn't there a Google support number that we called on the air once and found somebody very nice?
Oh, that was the Nexus. Yeah. Yes, that was the account. Oh, yeah.
I wonder if there's a Google support number we can call on the air and get their help.
That sounds like a great plan. I don't have my Nexus device. I think that was isolated to Nexus devices, and I've got the OnePlus 3 right now, which is another wrinkle because I don't have all my normal apps installed on this. So getting into them is a challenge. enter the username they used to sign in. Oh boy, this is just crazy, you guys. I can't believe I did that. This seems based around forgetting your password more than anything.
There's an opportunity. CNET has an article which I also sent that says how to do it with Google Voice, and it says use email forwarding.
Email forwarding. That's something to look into. I'm doing the help here, and one of the options is I'm having other issues with two-step verification.
Quote, unquote, other.
Which would definitely be what I'm having.
Other issues with two-factor auth. The show title.
Why you
visions. Sometime tomorrow, Matt Cutts is out jogging in Washington, D.C., and he's chortling to himself along the Potomac.
In D.C. now, yes.
And he's saying, you're never going to get a government job. We're not letting you in the Pentagon, fella. Not happening. And then I also envision there's five people somewhere in Google with a beer right now, who've done this before, who's just chortling their heads off saying, we got another one.
Oh, my goodness. I think by the way, I followed through on what you were saying, Gina, and it took me to that support page for the entry that we already read on the show. That's what it takes you to. I think what bothers me a little bit about this is many times when I install apps that are SMS apps, I end up having to manually put in my Google Voice number because what it recognizes is the number from the SIM card. And I'm wondering why that didn't happen. Why? Because that would be the safest way to activate two-factor. I mean, especially considering Google Voice is spelled out as not being, as being avoid this by all costs.
That it didn't auto detect your phone number.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I don't,
Jason. Yeah. Do you have, like Leo? You have probably 100 Android phones.
I do.
Is there another phone that operates not with the SIM card, but instead on Wi-Fi that might have already received the SMS?
Good question. I wonder. I don't know if any of that stuff is isolated to just mobile networks, though. It would still get the authentication message
Google Voice
through Wi-Fi.
It's not
though.
Dependent upon the SIM. Google Voice operates through the internet, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. No, it does.
But
you still got to log in.
You still got to log in.
Unless you have
right, a, is it's, a, next, it's not going to be hanging out in your notification shade because it's auto-logging you out, right? Like,
right.
It's auto-logged you out of all your accounts.
Unless there was some sort of weird blip along the way, it's probably... I mean, that's a good thought. And actually, back in my office, I do have a device. I don't know if it has the voice app installed on it, though, right now, because it's like my demo device for here. Anyways.
Oh, Jason.
You know, you can go ahead and write this down for the best of 2016. I'm pretty sure every time I come on this show, I do something stupid. There you go. Oh, boy.
Really appreciating your good humor about it.
Yeah, I'm agog. I couldn't do this. You know, you're not even Padre. You don't even have
Padre might actually know how to hack into my account, so I'll talk to him after the show. He's got God on his side, so this could be a good thing. Could be a good relationship for all of us. Boy, hey, why don't we thank a sponsor? I think it's time to take a break. I know I need a break. considering what has happened today, I'm still having a fantastic time. It's so much fun doing a show with Jeff, Gina, and Ron all at the same time. So thank you for being here for this.
Who needs access to your personal account after this? Come on. We're having a great time.
Jeez. This is going down, man. I'm not going to stop thinking about this one for a while. I believe that there's a way. And if we're doing it, if there is a show that someone that knows a way is watching, is going to watch, it's probably this show. So let us know, please. Let me know. But before we get into some of the other stories from the week, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter for this episode of This Week in Google. ZipRecruiter is perfect for if you are hiring and you don't know the best places to find qualified candidates. Where are you going to go? If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of the top job sites. With ZipRecruiter, you can do that. It's easy. Posting jobs in one place is not enough to find quality candidates, and you don't want to leave it up to chance. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, all with a single click. You just post one time, and you'll watch as the candidates just kind of roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages. Those are going to look good on any screen. You can add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors, more applicants. So, and you know, ultimately that means better hires in the long run. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. They make it really easy to kind of zero in on where those candidates are, how many applications you have from all over the map. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You don't have to manage that. You can actually add multiple users to your account to help manage all that stuff in the back end. Quickly screen candidates with real-world questions using free-form, multiple-choice, yes-no formats, all sorts of options there. View candidate responses in conjunction with their beautifully formatted resumes. You can rate them. You can hire the right person fast. That is what ZipRecruiter is for. We just hired our new editor, actually, using ZipRecruiter. So there you go. It's super effective, even we use it. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. More than 100 million candidate applications have been delivered. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/twig. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twig. Check them out, and we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of This Week in Google.
Jason,
yes.
Set us off on a story. Set us off on a story. We'll talk and vamp. You go back to your office. Get another phone.
Okay.
What do we want to talk about, guys?
Before you do that, I just put into the back channel doc. I was scrolling through the Gmail help forum. And somebody with your exact same problem locked out on two-step verification using Google Voice number, and this happened about a year ago. And it looks as if, like Gina said, there's the account recovery form where you can tell them what you did, and then within 3 to 5 days, someone will get back to you and they'll turn two-step verification off and give you access back to your account.
Okay, tell me what you did. Tell me what you did, Jason.
So this is an example of someone who's had the same problem and got their account back. So that's not the worst thing in the world.
There we go, Ron. You just made my day. My day has been destroyed and then made in the matter of 20 minutes.
But if you want to go get your device and we can vamp, that's fine.
I do. No need to vamp. Let's see. There's plenty of stories to talk about. Jeff, what have you thought about Android apps on Chrome? You have it installed on your Flip.
About it, then we'll compare notes.
Okay.
So it happens that I have the Chromebook Flip, and it's the first device that's allowed to put Android into Chrome. So you're not going to be surprised. Get ready for this, Gina. You know what I'm going to say. I couldn't do it with my apps account. Google! Google! Newman! So I used my regular account. Maybe I did something wrong. But once it's there, it's a little buggy because the weird thing is that it puts the Play Store in the app tray. Sometimes when I click on it, nothing happens. It's a little confused about where it is. But once I get it operated, once I open it up either through that or I go to the search icon and click there, and there it gives me the Play Store icon, and there I open the Play Store. Sometimes it'll work, and then I put in anything, Facebook, Twitter. And it installs the app, and it goes in with all the other Chrome apps, so you don't know which one's which until you open it up, and it's in its own smaller window, which you can then make large, and it operates as a separate window. So I'm operating Twitter, Facebook, and other things, and the big news is, we'll get to this when Jason gets back, the big news is that I could operate Skype. And you folks will remember that I tortured Leo for like a year and a half, Jammerbee and company trying to come up with all kinds of technical solutions to me trying to do Skype on a Chromebook. Doesn't work, so I was using Hangouts. And then there was an effort to kludge apps onto a Chromebook. It was absolutely awful, would not work at all. But Jason and I did indeed call each other, though probably he can't get to it because it's, wrong
He's
out. Yeah. There's the empty. Jason's been locked out of the office because two-factor won't let him back in.
well, that's really, Jeff, that's really interesting because last night on All About Android, Jason had a flip on hand and we were playing with it. We were looking at it and the conversation around installing apps on a Chromebook was similar, was basically the question I posed is that what app is there that I would need to use on a Chromebook as the Android app that I couldn't use on an equivalent browser or web-based experience, and Skype is the answer. So there you go. But the other things
Skype
like...
I think Microsoft Word.
Yep.
Microsoft Word, right, is different. Plus... I think there's photo editing apps. There's some other apps that you simply can't get on Chrome. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, like we were talking about photos. And so Jason went to go install Instagram, and it is not compatible with your device to install it. So you can, you're going to see apps that really utilize the rear facing camera probably will not have compatibility because a Chromebook doesn't have a rear facing camera. So maybe that's one of the things that are flagging them. So it's going to be interesting to see which ones are compatible and actually do work and which ones do get blocked.
The other interesting thing is that when I go to the Chrome, to the App Store. Yep. The Google Play App Store elsewhere and said, let me try to install an app on my Flip as I can install it on any one of my phones. It says, where do you want to install this app? Lists all the compatible phones. I can install it there. It doesn't list the Flip. So it doesn't see the Flip as a phone equivalent. Now, maybe that's just a bug. Maybe that's something architectural. But that was interesting, too, that I couldn't do that. I don't think it's life-changing for most people. They're going to say, I can finally, to your point, Ron, now I can finally do this one thing. Yeah, for me, it was Skype, and that matters. But I obviously have other devices. I'm on one right now, the Pixel C. However, what we said before, I think, is once you know across all Chromebooks that you can get all or virtually all Android apps, then that makes a different sales pitch for the device.
Absolutely.
Now, the other issue, of course, is that not every Chromebook will be able to do this. The original Pixel won't, the new Pixel will. And there's an extensive list of all of the brands and devices that will be able to do this in time. So it's going to roll out over time. I'm on the dev channel on the Flip, which is risky in moments.
Living on the edge.
But it works.
I just fired up the Flip and logged into a different email address because that didn't work. It didn't sync anything over. I'm going to have to go the long route in order to get back into this, but I have hope.
Yeah.
Because we got contacts at Google.
I certainly hope so. I can show this off a little bit. I'm
so you're going to call me?
Firing it up right now. I still have to install things. I will try and get it fired up quick enough to call you. But right now, there it is. The Play Store is basically just kind of logging in for the most part. And I do remember last night it took a little bit of time in order to get in there. And yeah, there you go. You've got the windowed kind of Play Store experience. I could go in here. I don't know. What should I install?
Facebook, Twitter.
Facebook. Sure, we can do this.
I hope you don't have two-factor on Facebook, do you?
I don't have two-factor on Facebook. I do have a pretty long, complicated password, though, that I can't remember. So that's a challenge.
It is really weird to see the Play Store in a window, I got to tell you, in a detached window. That is weird.
Yeah it is.
It adds like a little frame to the top of it, and it's got the maximize, minimize, close buttons, and all. It takes some getting used to, that's for sure.
Yeah, and
yeah, that's wacky.
There you go, full screen Play Store.
I feel better now.
Do you?
It's like a tablet. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think I kind of missed what some of the points that you guys were talking about, obviously, while I was out of the room. But my thoughts on this kind of match what I thought when I saw it, which is, if I'm in the market for, let's say, a tablet form factor going forward, personally, I probably wouldn't buy a tablet. I would buy a Chromebook with touch, and which means if I want anywhere near like the resolution or screen that you get on normal Android tablets, I'd probably have to pay a little bit more than a couple of $100 for a flip, because this display is, it's okay.
Yeah.
But that gives you more or less the tablet, the things that you would use an Android tablet for. As well as the productivity layout, and then Chrome OS for a lot of the kind of day to day computing stuff. That seems like the best case scenario for me. I don't know if Android apps on Chrome OS is a big deal for everyone, but I certainly like it. I like the option that it's there, and of the apps that I've loaded on, they seem to work pretty darn well. I mean, barring apps that require things like rear facing cameras or apps that automatically orientate to portrait, like Instagram, force you into layout.
Well, I have that problem on my Pixel C. When I run, for example, Facebook, if I go into certain groups, it insists on being vertical, not horizontal.
Right.
Certain things on the United Airlines app, same thing, it insists on vertical. It's weird how it doesn't know that it's on this.
That's something that you can set in your app. You can say only this orientation. You can force an orientation. Yep.
Hmm. So
see, the explainer is back.
There we go.
I told you.
But the developer gets to decide, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Now, yeah. Jeff, you've definitely spent more time with your Pixel C than I have spent with the Pixel C. Between these two, like, do you find yourself pulled in one direction over the other?
I'm pulled to the, when I travel now, I carry my flip because I knew we were going to talk about this today. I travel with the Pixel C and it works pretty darn well. The problem is I can't do anything with a thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
It won't do external memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I want to move a presentation off or do any of that kind of stuff, I've got an issue. So the weird thing is I've been traveling with both the Pixel C and the Flip, but not my big old Chromebook Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
And I hardly use the Flip. Only there are certain things. Medium works really badly. They just aren't doing enough QA on the mobile app. So it works better on Chrome OS. A lot of Google Docs things are clumsy on Android that work well on Chrome. So I can see, part of that's just fixing the way these apps work and making them better. And if you're going to produce something like Pixel C, think this through. The Pixel C, I've got to say, I'm gravitated toward it. It's working pretty darn well. And the other weird thing I have, by the way, is I use it for these many long flights I'm on. And I watch shows, and now my Google Play, will suddenly decide that it's going to crash on a show. And I think it's probably something to do with authentication. Mm-hmm. And so I have to wait till I'm back online, and then I play the show again, and it's fine. But it'll start yelling at me, and then my nightmare is I'm going to be on a 12-hour flight, and I can't play any movies. And I'll be going berserk and screaming, Google!
And everyone will hear it because everyone hears when Jeff screams Google. So I finally got into Facebook. Took a little while because I don't actually know the password. Man. But that's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. The password managers. That's why I rely on password managers.
And yeah, not two-factor.
Not yet. I bet you I will rely on two-factor once I figure it out. Once I install it when I'm not doing a show, probably so.
Oh, man.
I think the challenge here then becomes why or how do you decide one kind of offering versus another? You know, Facebook, yes. Facebook has a pretty decent web kind of web app. Actually, some people would say that Facebook's web app is too cluttered. And so if you use the mobile app the way you're seeing right now, it actually streamlines things. It just gives you your feed, gives you a few things on the side, puts everything up in the bar. So it gives you a choice, I suppose. Could be a little confusing to just the average person that happens to pick this up, but I don't know how many Android apps the average person is going to be installing on a Chromebook anyways. So,
yeah.
It looks cool, though.
Do you have Skype working or no?
That's right. That was the other thing. My apologies.
Just for a historic moment.
Already had one of those. Let's see here. We'll go ahead and install this. Yeah, because we had this call going before the show was even happening. And it looked pretty good. I don't know what I expected, but it worked about as well as
hotel Wi-Fi.
Right.
It'll ruin this call again, but that's fine. Come back on.
Probably so. Yeah, it's installing already. I don't know. I love my Pixel 1, if that's what you would call this, the very first generation of the Pixel. I'm bummed that it's not going to get these Android apps access to them because, I mean, I use this every single day here at work. So I would love to be able to do that. All right. So we might cut away for a second while I sign in.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what, I mean, this is like we said, this is a moment in history, a moment in time. The fact that, you know, it's bridging this gap because we've, you know, for how long have we been wondering about the divide between Chrome OS and Android apps, and this appears to be the solution. And I think it's a great moment, and it gives, like Jeff said, this is a added value to when you're shopping for your next device to consider. You know, I'm absolutely considering it now. You know, because it opens up a whole store of apps that you can use.
Yeah, so. I would look at something like the HP 13 rather than the Asus Flipbook.
Yeah. The Acer Chromebook is supposed to be pretty good as well too.
The Asus is a nice, you know, for the price, the Asus is worth it. It's $229, I think, right. But it's slow. There we go.
Yep, should be getting a call.
Look at that.
There we go.
There you go.
Skype in an app on a Chromebook.
Yeah,
there it is. Wow. There it is. Hey, Leo.
Yeah.
I'm using my Chromebook on the show. I love it. There's two Jarvises now.
Yeah.
There's nasty Jarvis. And there's nice Jarvis. Nasty Jarvis.
It works. We proved it.
We're shut this off. So
let's see that. We proved that we can make this work at least. Excellent stuff. All right. And actually the steps, if you happen to have a Chromebook Flip, it's not that difficult to opt in. You just basically have to get on kind of like the dev channel essentially and reboot into it. And then it becomes an option in settings to run Android apps on. And once you tag that on, the Play Store magically appears in your tray and you're off and running. So,
but Jason, I the Play Store appeared in my tray under my apps account and I don't think I couldn't get it working.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I've already had my fit while you were gone. So I won't.
the apps divide fit has been had.
All right. Fair enough. What else Android? Anything jump out at you guys? There was the timeline for Nexus devices. Essentially the Google is being upfront with how long its Nexus devices will in fact receive security updates. Again, you know, Google uses the Nexus devices as kind of an example for others who are creating devices that run Android, and in some ways this kind of mirrors that, but from an update standpoint, it's like, hey,
I got a little bit of a rude shock this week. My Moto 360 is not getting the next version of Android Wear.
Oh.
Yeah. How old is that? It's got to be coming up on 2 years now, right?
Which isn't that long for a multi-hundred-dollar device that you hardly use.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm in the same boat, Jeff. We were talking about this on All About Android. Is that given this new, you know, the latest update in terms of these timelines, my beloved Nexus 9 tablet will no longer receive Android OS updates after October. And also looking at that, you know, kind of timeline of the devices and when they no longer get the OS updates really points out that we're due for a new line of Nexus hardware to be announced soon, which I'm sure is going to come in September or August or September, right in time for the holiday rush. And so I'll be curious to see what the next generation are. But yeah, I mean, we're looking at the obsolescence lifespan of a Nexus device is 2 years at best at this point. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is kind of what Google has already said for the most part. I think it's 18 months Android? No, yeah, you're right. Two years from when it was available on the Play Store, so when it was first made available. And then security patches beyond, or just in general, a total of either 3 years or 18 months from the last sale date. So if it was a flop and it came out of the Play Store early, you'd still get the full 3 years of security updates. So I just like that they're being upfront about it, and I trust that Google is going to hold themselves to this. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good example for some of the other OEMs out there who are all so focused on creating whatever the next thing is that they just kind of lose interest in supporting their previous devices. That's a big bummer. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. What else do we have? We're kind of at the point to where we start kind of jumping through and tackle a few of these quickly here. Google is going to help you self-medicate, basically, or self-diagnose, maybe self-medicate if you think you understand what Google is telling you to do. Google will enable you with updates to the Google app to kind of get kind of symptom results on health searches. So if you ask it, what does a headache on one side of the head mean? Google would surface related conditions associated with this. I mean, I feel like this is what people do already with WebMD, but maybe Google is in a position to, you know, create better recommendations and not make you think you have cancer because you have a headache.
Yeah. It's just going to make it easier to increase your hypochondria and make you think that you have cancer or gout. So,
right. Yeah. I've been thinking about this a lot lately because, well, first I have a small child who gets sick a lot, but also I have a family member who got like a somewhat upsetting diagnosis for a thing that like I had never heard of. So I started Googling, and I just feel like the user experience around this, just about like finding out more about symptoms and diseases, is so, so bad. I mean, the first thing that I should see is like, don't panic, it's okay. And that's never the first thing that you see. The message is always the exact opposite, like this could lead to death but probably won't. I mean, you know, that's generally the messaging. So I hope that Google
gets better at this. For some measure of authority to come rise beyond just the page rank,
right?
So let me try and this is a somewhat related idea. Let me try this idea out and see if this makes sense, because I was writing a post about this. So I was on Facebook the other day, and somebody posted a picture of Justin Trudeau in a lip lock with another man, a politician. And one could guess this is the kind of bold thing he would do to make a statement about Orlando. And so I moused over the item thinking, it's weird I hadn't heard of that yet. But when you mouse over something on Facebook, it pops up related things right on the screen, right? The first screen that popped up was BuzzFeed saying people are passing along a bogus picture of Trudeau kissing. The next thing you can see was Snopes, bogus. and so I saw that there was the beginnings there of the opportunity for Facebook and Google and Twitter to indeed surface authority. And the same thing goes with this medical stuff. Right. So we're not asking them to surface what's true, but it's easier to surface what's false. And I think there were like three ways you could do this. One is if something's been debunked, then and you know it, the photo or the item, then just surface it and say, hey, hello, that's been debunked. Second, before you post something, to say you might want to see these other things about this same item. And then the third is gee, if that really happened, there was another post I saw a couple of days ago that said that on Sunday that Obama had signed an executive order banning assault weapons. I thought, oh. But then my journalist mind said, well, why haven't I heard that all over? And it's not in the Washington Post. It's not in the New York Times. It's not in the Guardian. Then I looked, and the URL was suspicious, and whoever killed it. So there are ways then that I think, and the ways that we in media could help. We could post and tag debunkings. If you are the AMA or a good medical service, you could post and tag and be recognized as a credible source. Now, that requires Google and Facebook and such to recognize some sources as better than others, but they do it in Google News. They allow the New York Times to post things. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you allow the Harvard Medical School to do that and say, if somebody searches on this, this is what they should see first?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, things get sticky, right? Because then you're assigning, then Google's becoming, an editor, it's the algorithm, whatever. But I think algorithmically, right, I'm sure that certain sources are weighted higher. Certainly Wikipedia is weighted as a very reliable source and is very high in search results. I mean, that's what search results do. Yeah, I would love to see that. I mean, certainly whenever I search for health stuff, I think, all right, like WebMD is not bad. Like I'll look at a page there, or if I see, a government medical organization, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to read that. But yeah. The medical stuff is a problem,
and
I feel like user experience is so bad still.
You're right.
Yeah,
you're
I have noticed in my own, you try when you get sick and you do the whole thing, you Google it, and then you find out that it's horrible and you're dying, and it turns out then you go to the doctor and you're not. But I have noticed that there is, kind of Google has an interface for around medical search results in this. If you type in any sort of thing, it gets this kind of blue box, and it's pulling in information from other sources and kind of organizing it by symptoms and by medicines that are used and treatment things and things like that. So I've noticed they've been making little steps in this direction that have been interesting. And so this is kind of more of a, as opposed to leaning on the WebMDs of the world to actually bring in that content in amongst themselves is interesting. But yeah, I feel like they've already been trying to organize that, because you're right, Gina, the user experience is awful in trying to research this stuff.
Yeah. The knowledge graph stuff is good. And I've seen that, I think maybe what I'm thinking about is maybe there needs to be a link or some sort of interface of like, are you experiencing this right now? Or did you just get this diagnosis? Like, go here. Right. Cause I feel like the way that a lot of the information is presented and is just very sort of dispassionate researcher based, when most of the time you or a family member or somebody is experiencing these problems and you're Googling because you're worried and scared and you don't know what to do. And I don't know if that's a Google thing or if that's just a way that we write about health stuff online, but I feel like there are ways to make that experience like just way, way better and more useful for people who are dealing with those symptoms or getting that diagnosis.
So what you're saying is that this kind of content requires a little better bedside manner on the screen, which is true. I think that's, absolutely. I think there's definitely a way to keep it, more clinical and more information based and not as soft or sympathetic. Right. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know, how you put someone at ease via text on a screen, but I guess, that's something to think about and that they're probably not thinking about the human factor.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's too tall an order, but I think there are ways to write words that are more reassuring and can be reassuring and informative at the same time. I don't know.
You know what I think might help with this? I think artificial intelligence might help with this.
Yeah. Robots.
Poor little Lynn. This is just a dab of AI.
Yeah, it will save us all. Another change that Google is making, not to search, but to maps, and this is actually pretty cool if you travel a lot. Let's say you go to Japan and you do a map search and you see all of these points on the map, but you don't know what they actually are. You see the names for them. You don't read the language. So it's very difficult to pick it apart. You might see that it's a restaurant, but you don't know what kind of a restaurant it is. There's a new Google Maps feature. It's actually being developed and launched first in Japan. It reveals icons for businesses and locations, more than 1,000 categories that'll basically help tourists who happen to be searching around on the map to see kind of that nuance, essentially. So even if they don't know the language, they're going to know that they called out the example of this is a ramen noodle restaurant as opposed to just a place to eat or whatever. I can see that as being really, really useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's that.
Yeah, right.
Some of these you just it is what it is.
I know what's going through your head. Jason's head is if Google's smart enough to do that, why aren't they smart enough to stop me from signing in with the
No. Yeah. I'm torn on it, to be honest. Like, that's obviously two-factor works well, right?
It doesn't work well. We've proven that it does not work well.
No. It works well in keeping someone out of the account.
Yes, it works well in keeping someone out. I'm going to file a bug report. This was stupid. I'm really angry that Google let you put in the Google Voice number for the account that you were locking down.
That is the challenge. That is the challenge, yes.
Lazy programmers. It's a simple Boolean check. Is this the number for this?
We can send people to the moon, and we can't let Jason into his email.
We cannot let him get into his email.
We can't stop Jason from messing up his email.
Right. Yes, please protect me from myself, because I obviously need your help. Gina, I know that you and I have talked quite a bit in the past about the Nano degree, the Android Nano degree from, I think, a little more than a year ago. They announced it at Google I.O., and then you were actually taking it. Apparently, there's a new Android Basics Nano degree. This is a Udacity service or series rather for people who have little to no programming experience to build simple Android apps, which sounds really cool. But where are you at with your Nano degree, and do you recommend kind of going in this route?
I've had a great experience with the Nano degree I'm doing, and I've slowed down. I mean, one of the things about a Nano degree is that you go at your own pace, and I got this new job and got kind of busy, and so I've slowed down in my progress. But I've had a great experience with it, and I highly recommend all the Udacity stuff. I've been really, really impressed with how good it is, and I'm actually really glad to hear that they've got something that's a little more accessible to people who don't have a lot of programming experience. The course that I'm taking is for, people who've already programmed in Java. But if you're interested in building Android apps, you have no programming experience, I highly recommend the Udacity stuff. I've been super impressed with it, and I've really learned a lot. And I need to get back to it, because I had some really good momentum going, and then life happened.
Like me and my Spanish.
What's that?
Like me and my Spanish lessons.
Yeah. Yeah, the hardest thing about these online courses is being really consistent about them. But they're fantastic, and it is a learn at your own pace. So if you can carve out an extra hour or two, a couple times a week, you really can make a lot of progress and learn a lot. So highly recommend.
At Google I.O., they announced this course, and they see it as a sequence, so that it's if one feeds the next. And they needed the funnel, as we like to say, to get people going in. And I think Gina's right. They're very good. Son Jake is taking one in iOS. And it's a great way to get people whole new jobs and careers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because there are a lot of people that, myself included, like I think about an app or whatever, and I think, oh, well, how difficult would it be to actually do this? Well, I know nothing about, coding, so I'm just not going to take that next step. But knowing that there's kind of an official route, I mean, this, I suppose, would be as official as it gets coming from, a course created by Google that's targeted for someone who knows little to nothing.
Oh, you're certified,
coding.
Yeah.
So
I hear they're going to offer one. Jason, I hear they're going to offer one in two-factor.
Would you, Jarvis?
The thing that I want to say about the Udacity course is that the thing that surprised me about it is that it's extremely career focused. It's like for people who want to change careers and do this thing, like they part of my course is a resume review, practice Android developer interview questions. They review like they look through your resume. Like there's career coaching involved, which I didn't need. So, and it's optional, but it's really set up to, and there's ways to like get in touch with recruiter. They have, hookups with recruiters. I mean, they're looking to turn you into, I'm a brand new Android developer and I'm going to get a job as this. So even if it's, whether it's idle curiosity of wanting to build an app on the side, or if you really want to change your career, I think that's very possible. And then I think that's what I really like about it. I think there are lots of ways to learn how to code, lots of really good ways. That's what I liked about the Udacity stuff, is because they have that partnership with Google, and they've got that kind of career flow, recruiter flow going on.
Excellent. Few quick bits before we get to our last sponsor, and then do some tips and picks and all that kind of stuff. You might want to check your spam folder, because Amazon is doing some credits based on the Apple eBooks antitrust settlement.
Yeah, I got $59.
Nice.
Yeah, I got $19. I was this has been like class action suit of Palooza this year.
Yeah.
Like a month ago or so, I got like $30 in my Uber account. Then there's this, and then there's the unfortunately there's the ridiculous Ticketmaster one, which is nonsense. But lots of class action suits. We're cashing in.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the Ticketmaster one is the other one where if you paid, it basically if you bought anything between, 1990 and 2013, you were paying fees that were seemed to be, kind of shady, shady processing fees.
And, did you log into your Ticketmaster account to see what you got or how much you had?
Go.
No, after you, Jason.
I logged in right after they announced it, but they didn't have any supported shows. So basically what they're offering is they're offering you free tickets, pairs of free tickets to upcoming shows. And those at one point were to be determined, and everyone just expected them to be horrible shows, basically, and very, very minimal discounts for others. So you should definitely check it out. I didn't get an email notice. I just happened to like log in and saw it, and I was like, whoa,
I guess that happened. I saw people talking about it on Facebook, and then I logged in and I saw I just had page after page after page of $2.25 vouchers, which I guess was the amount of the fee for years of shows, I guess, that I bought through Ticketmaster. And then finally now the list of – what I find annoying about this, so the Amazon one is great because it's like, hey, to me, just here's $19 that you can go buy books with. Awesome. Great.
Done.
But for some reason, the Ticketmaster one is you can only use those credits on this list of shows, which are none of those shows are shows I want to go to. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a non thing. Like they should have just given me credit to buy more tickets with because that's what I would have done. But but who knows what the legal ramifications of that all that were. But at least the benefit from the Apple class action suit with Amazon is that I get $19 to buy a book to read on my vacation in July.
So, yeah. I got $15, and what I really enjoyed the most is that, on my phone, the Amazon app, sent me this push notification that was like, surprise, Amazon's got a gift for you. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. And then I tapped on it, and it was like, this class action lawsuit with Apple. It was all this legalese with a number, and I was like, oh, okay, that's a surprise. I mean, it was indeed a surprise for me. I just love that the copy editor for the push notification was like, woohoo, and then you go to the page, and it's like this whole boring, long explanation about a class action lawsuit. Also, you get $14.92. Enjoy.
Yeah.
All right. Sure.
$14 to spend almost on anything on Amazon, though. That's that's the right way to do it. I completely agree with you, Ron.
Ticketmaster.
It was like, really? That's what? Okay, whatever.
Amazon was giving away Apple's money, and Ticketmaster was having to give away Ticketmaster's
money.
Yeah,
that's the difference. Yep. There you go. For Amazon, it's a feature. For Ticketmaster,
let's do the best job we can at giving away all of Apple's money.
Yes. There we go. Any last story ideas before we get to the break and then do picks? Anything you guys were dying to talk about? Three.
I'm good. What about the KFC box that allows you to charge your phone?
That's a good last story, I think. that's the right one to go with. That was a good pick.
I saw that. I was like, wow, Colonel Sanders is getting 21st centuryized. KFC has come up with a new takeout box that's called the 5-in-1 meal box. And not only do you get a delicious fried chicken dinner, but this is only available in New Delhi and Mumbai, India. But the KFC box comes equipped with a USB port that allows you to charge your device as you're eating. And that's actually a great photo of it. If we can pull up the link on it, but you can see
it's down at the bottom,
it's this great, cardboard box with a USB hookup to it. It's awesome.
And greasy chicken.
And a battery?
Yeah.
Like they're shipping batteries with every one of these meals? Seriously?
Yep.
Whoa.
Which is kind of crazy. Like what I don't understand.
Environmentally.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't figure out in the article whether is that battery rechargeable? And then so that's like an external battery that you can recharge and then recharge your phone with later. I couldn't find whether that is the case or not. I'm assuming so. But if not, wow, that is a big environmental waste.
Yeah.
What a box.
I mean, there's a little image of a person throwing a thing into the trash on the side of that water box.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
There's a whole video that goes with it.
Yeah. Dang.
Where they've got the
Oh my god.
Oh no. Is this you? Your cell phone runs out of batteries when you're at KFC.
all you need to do is
get this meal. And there you go. It comes with a cord.
It comes with the cord. Oh, my
God.
And Rohan just asked you out. You have to get back to him.
Oh, you got your message from Rohan.
Oh,
you got your two-factor.
You got into your account. That's better than me.
Rethink what a meal box can do.
It's very Apple-esque branding. Rethink what your KFC box can do.
No one, I'm convinced, no one ever rethought that a KFC box should charge their phone. No one ever thought that.
Except for the marketing team. No one ever thought, what else can I do with this box?
Apparently a fully charged KFC box provided 17% charge over a half an hour before it burned through its battery and died. So it's not a huge lift.
But so now here's the other question, though, is that while it's charging that battery, is it also keeping the food in the box warm?
Oh, man, you would hope so. And if not, then they really need to retool it. Yes, they need to retool it. And back to the drawing
board. This story was like a Christmas gift. This was just like, here's this wonderful bit of fried chicken charging your phone.
It was a perfect way to wrap up this segment. We're going to thank our sponsor right now, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to do some tips and picks and all that sort of stuff. But before we get there, let's talk about your sleep. Are you sleeping okay? Your eyes are a little baggy. You look a little tired. I think you need a new mattress. And that's what Casper can provide for you, a good night, quality sleep. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper's revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms. Then they pass that savings directly to the consumer, directly to you. Casper's mattress is obsessively engineered. It's a mattress at a great price. Casper combines two technologies, basically, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam. And that creates an award-winning sleep surface that's just the right sink, just the right bounce. Casper Mattress is actually a 2016 Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award winner. We have two Casper mattresses out of the three beds that we own, and we are working on buying a third mattress for the third bed because our daughter never wants to sleep in her bed because it's not as comfortable as the other two beds. True story. So we're going to get her a mattress, and then we can all sleep in our own beds again. A Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support. The breathable design sleeps cool. It helps you regulate your temperature throughout the night. I've been enjoying it. Super soft, super comfortable. So I highly recommend it. They ship it to you in this box that basically, you know, I was able to kind of pull the box upstairs. The mattress itself is a little heavy when it's out of the box, but when it's in the box, it's easy to move around, find the right place, open it up, drop it down, and you're sleeping. You might fall asleep right then and there. So be careful. You'll be like unwrapping it, and then you'll be like, and then you'll fall asleep. That's how comfortable it is. Try sleeping on a Casper mattress. You can do it out of the comfort of your own home. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality, you're going to spend a third of your life on a mattress sleeping. So Casper offers free delivery, painless returns within a 100-day period. So you don't have to lie down in a showroom for 5 seconds and make your decision there. That's what we did with the mattress that we're going to be replacing, by the way. And did you know statistically lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's actually the right bed for you? Casper mattress is engineered to meet the Goldilocks standard of just right. So it's not too hard or too soft. It upholds the highest environmental production standards and are made in the USA. It's free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. So if I haven't already convinced you, you need to go to the site and check it out for yourself. Get a Casper mattress today. You can get $500, you can get a twin size, or $950, you can get a king size. Compared to industry averages, that's a pretty remarkable price, especially for what you're getting here. You can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/twig and enter the promo code twig. That's casper.com/twig. With promo code TWIG. Terms and conditions apply. So definitely go there and check it out and find out why Casper mattress is so dang comfortable. And, you know, you could try it for a really long time for free and see what you think. All right. We are going to do some picks and tips. Who should we start with? How about we start with the new guy? We'll start with you, Ron. What do you got?
Considering I didn't know I had to come to it with a pick. So
I figured we'd get it over with.
Yeah.
we'd let you off the hook.
But yeah, so considering that one of my personal GTD heroes, Gina, is on the show, and in honor of that, I thought I'd share a neat little productivity Chrome extension that I use on a daily basis. And you guys have probably heard about it. It is one of those things where I don't know, you know, I never know how ubiquitous these extensions are. I figure it was better safe to bring it up than not. But I've installed the Momentum Chrome extension. And what this is that basically this installs on Chrome. And every time I open a new tab, instead of getting the default Chrome tabs or whatnot, I get the Momentum screen, which very prominently displays the time. It greets me. It says, "Good afternoon, Ron." And then at the beginning of the day, it asks me, "What is your main focus for today?" So if I'm working on a project or I've got a deliverable that I have to do or whatever, I can just say, "Hey, I'm doing this." So, and what happens is that every time I open a tab after I've entered in my main focus, as opposed to seeing a list of links or Chrome apps or things like that, I get the Momentum page, and it reminds me that I really should be working on that document. So it's a great way to keep you from having your mind wander, keep you on task, keep you focused. It's also got integrations with it's got weather integration, so it shows me that it's currently 58 degrees in San Francisco. It does have support for a small to-do list. So if I wanted to add more to-dos other than my main focus, I could. But basically, it's just a neat little extension that keeps you on task, as well as give you very pretty pictures and make you aware what time it is. Because we all know we need to stay focused on what we're working on. So Momentum, it's free in the Chrome store. It's a small install, and it's once I installed it, I can't live without it. So every machine, my laptop, my desktop, every computer I have, I always make sure it's on Chrome. So
fantastic. There it is. Momentum, nice. Chrome Momentum. Extension. Excellent pick, especially because you were told to come up with a pick right before the show began. So you did a good job, Ron.
I scrambled. Well, what happened was is that I went to open a new tab to go look for something, and Momentum opened up. I'm like, I'll just do this.
Hey, there you go. See, it was meant to be. It was meant to be.
There you go. So.
That's proof positive right there. Let's see here. Gina, what about you?
So my thing this week is a little bit self-indulgent. I hope you'll humor me. It's a new app by Twitter called Twitter Engage, which does something near and dear to my heart, which is give you insights about your activity on Twitter.
Wait a minute. This sounds familiar.
Yes, it is. It's iOS only. And yeah, that Verge review is like Engage is a place for Twitter celebrities to interact with their followers. It's not just for celebrities. It works for everyone, but it is, like I said, iOS only. And it'll tell you things like, did you get followed by a verified user, or who your biggest fans are, or who your followers, what your followers have been talking about the most in the past 24 hours. Kind of live analytics of retweets and likes. If you tweet, you can kind of see these like cool live bar charts change, as activity happens on your tweets. And so I'm recommending this app because, pour one out, We just announced we're in the process of shutting down ThinkUp. So this is a really good alternative to ThinkUp. We're refunding all of our subscribers, and we're made this very difficult decision for a variety of reasons, which you can read about we wrote a post. You can just go to Twitter /ThinkUp if you care and you want to learn more. You can find out more there. But I really liked this Engage app, and I was happy to hear that in the early product discussions at Twitter, they were actually looking at ThinkUp, and so it informed some of their design decisions. Which
ThinkUp.
Yeah,
exactly. They should have looked a little closer, in my opinion.
Indeed. But sincerest form of flattery.
There, lady. You got any nice patents hanging around?
Unfortunately, no. But Engage, I think, is going to be really good because they're not dealing with API limitations. This is a Twitter app, and API limitations is one of the reasons why I think didn't make it. It just became really difficult to get to do things to show insights in the app because we just didn't have access to the data.
That's the real challenge. I mean, Gina and I had lunch last week in New York, which was delightful and always good to see you in person. But one of the things we talked about was the challenge of building an application that's dependent on other applications, and when they make changes, you've got to make changes, and it can get overwhelming, and it's a real challenge to make that a success. And I think you should be immensely proud of what you guys did with ThinkUp, and it was one of my favorite applications. So it's definitely definitely you added good to the world. So
I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate all the support from everyone at Twit and everyone who listens to and watches Twit and endured all of my ThinkUp promotions week after week. I really do appreciate it. But this Engage app is really cool. And if you are looking for those kinds of insights, it looks promising.
Mashed Potato in chat room has a really good point. ThinkUp, you should have bought Twitter. I mean, Twitter's on the market.
Why didn't I think of that? We should have totally done that.
Yeah. Oh, I love ThinkUp. I've been a happy subscriber for the last couple of years as it's been around, and I've enjoyed getting those notices in the morning about the previous day and kind of taking a look at all the information that I wouldn't know otherwise. So really, really applaud all the work that you guys did with ThinkUp, and I'm bummed
so
to
much.
See it go away.
But well, you did a great job with that. Thank you.
Jeff, what is your number of the week?
So this is one of those stories that I think will lead to a wonderful topsy-turvy Silicon Valley moment. So the, what's it called? Fiber to the Home Council, of which Google is a member, released a study saying that having Google Fiber could raise rents by 11%. So here's what I bet is going to happen. That they're saying that is a good thing. In other words, that your property is worth more, you should want mm-hmm. Google Fiber. But you know darn well what's going to happen. In insane real estate market, San Francisco, there'll probably be demonstrations and egg throwing, insisting, how dare you install Google Fiber in our neighborhood? We'll see.
Fascinating stuff. I want Google Fiber. It's rolling out to all these different places. It never comes up to Petaluma. I'm just kind of bummed about that. One of these days, Petaluma will be on its roadmap.
Sure. Keep thinking that.
Yes, I'm saying that out loud. If there's two things I want Google to walk away from this show with, it's one, Petaluma for Google Fiber, and two, you should really rethink the two-factor thing with Google Voice.
I think you've got the priority mixed up on those, Jason.
I'm hoping you're going to get back in your account before you get Google Fiber. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
That's my hope for you, Jason.
I'm not sure my thing could be anything other than that cautionary tale that you had earlier today. If you're thinking about doing two-factor authentication, as I was, take the time to think about the implications of using your Google Voice account with it, and don't do it.
Well, I think the large lesson here is that whenever you're doing anything that involves security and two-factor authentication or anything with passwords, like whether it's Authly or LastPass or whatever app you're using, do it slowly and do it in an environment where you have no other distractions, or I don't know, not host a podcast while you're doing it. That might be the
First step. See, like I said, Ron, it actually seemed like a good idea at the time.
Jason, this is a tribute to you, and I mean this. Because obviously, if you've been doing it in the quiet of a room, you would have thought this through. You would have been it. But I got a break. Jarvis is yammering on now. I'll do it right now. And you did it. And I think the moment you did it, you knew, uh-oh, what have I done? And so we all appreciate your sacrifice for the show.
Anytime, but never again. Happy to do it, but that's the last time I ever break my email on this show. Until the next time that I do it unintentionally, that is. That's it for this week. Got to say bye to some folks that I just really have enjoyed, other than certain circumstances outside of their control, really enjoyed the last couple of hours hanging out with, starting with Ron Richards, first time on Twig. Pretty monumental first time on Twig, I have to say.
I'll be honest, I'll never forget it. This is definitely going to be one that I will remember. But it's been an honor to be on Twig. You guys can catch me, if you aren't already aware of it, catch me and Jason on All About Android every Tuesday at 5:30 Pacific time. We always have a good time on that show. But also, I'm going to be on the Screensavers this weekend, actually on Saturday. I'm really excited to join Leo on the Screensavers again. So if you guys have any questions at all, anything that is Android related, Google related, pinball related, anything at all, please email us at newscreensavers@twit.tv. And actually going to have some neat pinball tech convergence thing, combining one of my personal hobbies with technology on the show. I'm really excited about that. So watch it this Saturday at like 3:00 Pacific time, and write in your questions at newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Radical. Thanks, Ron. It was a lot of fun. Gino, what about you? What you got? I mean, you've got a lot of things going on. Obviously, ThinkUp is kind of winding down, but what else?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, MakerBase is still around and going really well. MakerBase.co, it's an IMDb for apps and websites. You can add your projects and your collaborators. And I've got a new job here at Postlight, which is an agency here in New York City. And we write a newsletter called Track Changes. So if you go to trackchanges.postlight.com, lots of really good content there. The founder of Postlight here is Paul Ford, one of the best tech writers on the web of our generation, as far as I'm concerned. And my tip this week was an iOS app, and I'm sorry, I know that's a little far-fetched for this week in Google, but in Track Changes this week, I wrote a post called The Apps We Use at Postlight. It's a rundown of the apps that I've observed the engineering team here, which is kind of very cutting-edge modern engineering team using, and it's been really, I've been learning a lot, and I've been trying to share what I'm learning here in Track Changes, so I hope you'll check it out. Trackchanges.postlight.com, and that's it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Gina. It's so always so much fun podcasting with you, and appreciate it. Thank
you. Great to be here.
And Jeff, how about you, sir? You're gonna hop back over to VidCon, I imagine, and see some YouTube celebrities.
The industry reception starts shortly, so I'll go say hello to some people. And Jim Lauterbach, who's our old friend from Vision 3, is the curator of the industry track. I'm glad he brought me in. And yeah, we'll have fun.
Excellent. Have a good time.
Say hi to Jim for me, Jeff. My old boss.
Will do.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Buzzmachine.com for all that Jeff is up to. And of course, I'm sure we'll be back next week on this show. You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell. I'm sure I'm going to be updating my Twitter feed with the over the next however many days it takes for me to either
Jason, get the final word. You were a mensch.
Man, yeah. I'm not looking forward to the next couple of days of processes. The problem is when something like this happens, like if you've got important stuff coming to your inbox, you can't get to it.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at right now. That's what I'm panicking about a little bit because there are some important things that I need to get to. But whatever. That's neither here nor there. That doesn't matter anything to you. What matters to you is that we reach the end of this show. I'm going to do that right now. Thank you so much for tuning in. Every single week, Twig is on every week at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Of course, you can catch the live show and find out what we're doing before everybody else if you go to twit.tv/live to watch. Otherwise, you can find it on demand at twit.tv/TWIG, Twig. And that's all there is to it. Next week, I believe Leo is back in this chair. Until then, everyone have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you guys later. Bye, everyone.